Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Folks, it's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Well, here we are again. Another crazy week. It never ends. In fact, it just intensifies, accelerates. Things go faster and faster, the quickening of the clocks. Well, we're going to talk a little bit this morning. Well, we'll talk a little book talk, not a lot. And then we're going to talk, you know, exactly what I told you last week, this whole Ukrainian nonsense. I'm just going to point out a couple things to you. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. It's all smoke, mirrors, hype, deep state nonsense, planted and false information, the Dems and the media in collusion with their little allies in the deep state. It's just, you know, it's a replay of the whole Russia scene, but with Ukraine. And as I surmised last week, you know, the real purpose of the Dems, if they can inflict another razor cut on Trump, you know, death by a thousand cuts, they will. But what they're really doing is getting rid of Joe Biden. And also, as I forecast last week, nobody else was, just me. Everybody would be jumping on Joe Biden. Trump would be jumping on Joe Biden. The AG would be jumping on Joe Biden. Blah, 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 blah. You know, the Democrats don't have to do anything. I mean, it's a very clever ploy. They don't have to do squat. All they have to do is go after Trump for Ukraine, and the Republicans and everybody else are going to do everything they would like to do to Joe Biden without them lifting a finger. It's diabolically clever, and it's working. Joe Biden is done. So, which in one respect is good for Trump, because really Biden, as lame as he is, as corrupt as he is, as senile as he is really the only person, I think, that the Democrats now have, other than Michelle Obama, that could give Trump some kind of trouble in the states he needs to carry because of union. You know, Michigan, Wisconsin, etc. So the whole thing is a political subterfuge, a political charade. Oh my, it's unbelievable. In the meantime, we have buku problems for both individuals and for the country as a whole, internationally and nationally. And here we are wasting time on political claptrap. And we're going to talk a little bit about Iran. You know, there was the press was eagerly carrying stories here the last few days. Oh, Iran is bending a little bit. You know, at the UN, when all the princes of state, including Trump, were in over this last week. And Trump, by the way, delivered as a sidelight a rousing speech against globalism. I mean, basically, he told the UN, "You are a bunch of globalist idiots. I'm not having any of it. America's not having any of it. And you can go play your games without us." I just summed up his speech for you. It was pretty good. And it ties right into the globalism theme that I've been bringing to you off and on here for the last month and a half. Which brings us to the next little segment that we're going to have this morning. And that's going to be a real globalist scheme. You're going to just love this. Did you know that your tax dollars, that's right, your hard-earned tax dollars, that check that comes out of your paycheck every week, or if you're an entrepreneur or business owner, that check you write in April to the federal government, which is so wisely spent, did you know that there's about $43 billion of that money that's going into the pockets of the globalists that run the big banks? Oh, yeah. I'm not going to get into the sordid details of that for you this morning, but I'm going to give you an overview, and boy, it's going to piss you off. I mean, it's going to really piss you off. And then we are going to talk about, of course, we're going to have our story. We have to have our historical story. So we're going to have a really good one. It kind of ties right in with all the nonsense, subterfuge, who's your ally, who's your enemy, you know, cloak and dagger spy stuff in Washington, D.C. right now, except that it's going to be set in 1780. Oh, yes, 1780. And you thought things changed? No. The more they change, the more they remain the same. And then finally, I'm going to bring to you some tidbits which have come out. Nobody else is covering, of course. But, you know, the whole Kavanaugh thing, which was another, you know, death by a thousand paper cut and diversion by the Democrats. A diversion away from, in some ways, away from Biden and his ties to the Democrats and the Ukrainians. In some ways, a diversion from the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton working with the Ukrainians and asking the formerly kind of left-of-center government of Ukraine to aid them in defeating Trump, you know, foreign influence in elections. And also, of course, to deflect against the fact that indictments and criminal referrals are now starting to roll down from the AG's office in the Justice Department. And Horowitz, who I still don't trust, I might add, you know, an Obama appointee, can't seem to get his reports done. Horowitz's report on FISA abuses and other things is taking shape and coming out. So, you know, there's lots of reasons for the Democrats to throw up glittering objects to, follow the bouncing ball, which is in the opposite direction of where they don't want you to look. You know, I mean, it's the whole thing is just, it's gag me. The whole thing is gag me. So, without further ado, why don't we get started? And we're going to start with our historical story. So, on September 23rd, 1780, there was a rioter, and he was halted by three members of the Revolutionary Army. Remember, the revolution was in full bore. And he claimed that he was on some romantic excursion, and he tried to bribe the three colonial soldiers who had stopped him with his watch. And, God, I hate to say this, unusual for America, maybe unusual for America at the time, they turned down the bribe, they searched him, and in his shoes they found detailed drawings of all things, of the defenses at West Point, a really key fort that was commanded by none other than a general by the name of Benedict Arnold. So they arrested this guy that they found in the woods galloping along, and his name was Major John Andre, A-N-D-R-E. He was also the adjutant general to the British commander in New York. Gee, imagine that. And they reread the shoe plans, and the rebel officers determined that they could only have been drawn, the information could only have been gleaned from the American commander of the fort, the same Benedict Arnold. Huh. Arnold, by the way, in the meantime, had gotten wind of the fact that Andre had been captured. And, oddly enough, he got on the first horse out of Dodge, left the fort and galloped his way down to New York, where he was welcomed with open arms by his British cohorts. Well, George Washington had been planning to visit Arnold at the fort because Arnold was known as quite a temperamental commander, and he was not happy that he'd been passed over by a promotion. So Washington, thinking that the guy was still a good general and on the American side, was going down there to kind of soothe the ruffled feathers. Well, when he arrived at the fort, of course, Washington, there was no Benedict Arnold. He wasn't greeted at the house. He wasn't greeted at the entrance to the fort. And George Washington was rather miffed at this. He got more and more miffed as the day wore on and the extent of the treachery of Benedict Arnold became known. But what Benedict Arnold had left behind was his wife. Her name was Peggy, Peggy Arnold. And she was, apparently, I've never seen a picture of her, an extremely beautiful woman, amply endowed. Some say the most amply endowed of the most beautiful women of the colonies at that time. And Washington went to visit her. And he wanted to see if she had any role in the plot or what other intel he could gain. And, of course, she knew that he was coming to visit her because they had all their little chirpies throughout the fort. And she managed to dress in, shall we say, loose-fitting garb. How's that? And then she managed to act crazy and scream and yell and wail, and how could Benedict do this to me, and how could he betray the colonies, and, you know, and you can kind of picture the whole deal. In the meantime, everything's kind of hanging out of the robe. Well, George Washington, being a guy, said, oh, well, there's no way that this beautiful woman could have any part in this horrible treachery. And so he said, you know, don't arrest her, and I'll come back later, and I'll have another talk with her. Well, later never came, because within 12 hours of their first, I wouldn't call it an interrogation, shall we say meeting, Peggy Arnold was on a horse, having fully recovered her sanity, by the way, and her clothing, and she was on her way down to New York to join her beloved Benedict. Now, here's where the rub comes in. So, Peggy's last name, before she married Benedict, baby, was Shippen, S-H-I-P-P-N. And it appears that Peggy Shippen, prior to marrying Benedict Arnold, had been engaged to one, oh yes, Major John Andre. Imagine that. There are no coincidences, are there? And here's another non-coincidence for you. 3 days after Benedict Arnold married this shapely woman who had been engaged to a British officer, the same British officer who was carrying the plans for West Point to the British in New York, 3 days after the marriage is when Benedict Arnold started feeding information to the British. Now, one can only wonder at what kind of triangle was going on here. But, you know, it is this subterfuge, this who is my ally and who is my enemy, who is my friend and who is my lover, that seems to epitomize current Washington, although with all the modern trappings, like, you know, cell phones and text messages between the lovebirds, Strzok and Page, and, you know, all that kind of juicy details. Back in the day, of course, all they had was the plans of forts stuffed in the shoes of British officers. By the way, dressed as colonials, not as officers. So the moral of this story, folks, is that the more things change, the more they remain the same. And of course, Benedict Arnold and Peggy Shippen, or Arnold, or whoever she really was, were never brought to justice. But that's yet another tale. Okay. And, but which, by the way, kind of ties in with what goes in Washington, D.C. today, too. Treachery is not brought to justice. All right. That is our historical story for today. Now, I'm going to give you a short little segment here. So, Kavanaugh. You know, all the recent uproar about Kavanaugh, which is designed by the Dems to inflict a razor cut, yet another razor cut on Trump. And maybe if they were really lucky to inflict some razor cuts on Kavanaugh, and maybe if they were really, really, really lucky to influence his decision on some key upcoming issues, including abortion. But here's what the press hasn't told you about that. I mean, the allegations of the most recent babes have been thoroughly discounted, thoroughly thrown out, thoroughly proven false and contrived, and it's a whole nother media spin thing again. But let's go back to Christie Blasey Ford, his first accuser. Remember that whole scene? I mean, she was so unbelievable, she was unbelievable. Well, I reported to you back when the original Kavanaugh mess was going on, that one of her friends, who kind of seemed to be coordinating all these things, was a former FBI, or a former or a current. Nobody really knows, because Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, is not Trump's friend. But that yet, too, is another tale. Something that I projected to you, by the way, when he was appointed. You know, and everybody said, oh, what a great appointment. No, not so much. Kind of what I thought about Mueller, you know? And I was right. So, anyway, the Christie Blasey Ford and her friend McClan, some other really interesting, juicy tidbits have come out. Number one, you probably heard that Blasey Ford's own attorney said, well, you know, she really did it because she's all about abortion, and Kavanaugh's not about abortion, and, you know, is really kind of political. I mean, that's basically what her own attorney said. This was about a month, 6 weeks ago. Well, now we find out, Christy Blasey Ford's beach friend, so to speak, is this, and she was talking to a beach friend. She had admitted to the beach friend, supposedly, that Kavanaugh was this lecherous guy and all this kind of stuff. It turns out this beach friend that's been referenced in all these transcripts and stuff is, oh my gosh, it's Monica McClain, the former and or current or whatever she was, FBI agent. Under Comey's FBI, of course, and you'll really like this, it now turns out, this is just coming out, by the way, it was October, let's see, oh yeah, it was actually just in the last week. It was originally referenced, by the way, in several kind of scattered, really minuscule reports around October 8th, 2018, but now it's taking shape. So listen to this. You're going to love this. So Monica McClain, the FBI or former FBI or whatever she was that kind of coordinated all this and coached Christine Blasey Ford and did all this, guess what's been found out? Huh. She was also the spokeswoman for a guy by the name of Preet Bharara. That's Preet Bharara. He happened to be the former Obama. Oh, gee, there's Obama again. Barry, there's nothing you don't have your little hands in. He was the former Obama U.S. attorney who was tossed out by Trump. And he turned aggressively partisan against Trump. And not only that, he became a top deputy and trusted aide to one Chuck Schumer, the current Senate majority leader. Huh. I'm sorry, minority leader. And by the way, the Senate minority leader at the time of the first Kavanaugh escapade back in 2018. There's now some FBI investigations going on of all this skullduggery, this lying, this fraud, this perjury, this whole trumped up, no pun intended, this whole connived and conjured deal that Blasey Ford did for political purposes. And it seems that Ford's friend, another of her friends, Leland Kaiser, originally said that, oh yes, Christie told me all about this and it was so horrible. Well, now it turns out that the same Monica McClain, it's amazing how all the lines, you know, come back to her, had coached Kaiser and had, shall we say, not threatened but coerced Kaiser into saying that Christie had told her about this alleged terrible incident 30 years ago and that it was all true and correct. Well, Kaiser, now that she's been questioned by the FBI and really doesn't want to get into a perjury trap, now she says she claims no memory of the event. No memory of Christie Blasey Ford ever talking about the event. No memory of anything related to Judge Kavanaugh, Christie Blasey Ford, and all the trumped-up nonsense. And by the way, she also said she never knew, never met, wouldn't even recognize Brett Kavanaugh back in the day when the alleged event occurred. In the meantime, McLean's texts, she was stupid enough. The FBI just doesn't train their agents well, I guess. But she put her coercion to Kaiser, the original coercion to Kaiser to remember this event that never occurred, she put them in text messages, which have now been recovered. So, this is kind of a great lead-in to to the whole Ukrainian thing, is it not? I mean, everything is a mirage, folks. You really have to step back and go, who is doing it? Why are they really doing it? And what really don't they want us to look at? That's really the game you got to play. And I've just given you two perfect examples of it. Two perfect examples, unfortunately. Let's talk about Iran, shall we? So, you know, the news, I can't even call them news. These are just schlocks. They're just schlocks. I mean, most of the news people out there today are just, Trump was exactly right. They are the enemy of the people. They truly are the enemy of the people. They are the folks who are entrusted with bringing information to Americans so Americans can make informed decisions to benefit and protect themselves and benefit and protect their country. And obviously the press is not even close to doing that. Quite the contrary. So the press was breathlessly reporting this week, oh, Iran is bending. Oh, you know, this could all be averted. Oh, we're not going to have to go to war and all the O's and ah's and whatever. Let me tell you why this jubilation, if you will, is number one, misplaced, and number two, really, 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 really premature. Putting aside the mentality of Iran's leadership, which is they want the 12th Imam to come. The 12th Imam won't come until there's like this total world holocaust. And everybody who is not them is an infidel. And infidels, according to the Quran, must be exterminated, i.e. death to America, death to Israel, death to this, death to that, you name it. Well, Iran is just playing a game. They are stalling for time so they can get a bomb. They watch what happened with North Korea, who, by the way, they have worked closely with on missile technology and other types of technology, and they realize that once they get the bomb, nobody's going to screw with them, which is exactly why they have to be screwed with now, before they get the bomb, and they know it. So this is all a time-buying deal. And you know, in the Quran, it says that it is okay. In fact, it is looked favorably upon if you lie. Excuse me. If you lie to an enemy. If you lie to an infidel. If your lies are meant to further the aims of the Quran, the aims of the Prophet Muhammad, and the aims of Islam. In the case of Iran, crazy radical Islam. Well, this is why you'll have to take all this Iran shit with a grain of salt. Okay. And by the way, I didn't say the word. It's supposed to be stuff, not whatever I said. My apologies. Let's look at Iran. Number one, Iran obviously planned and coordinated the attacks on Saudi Arabia. Maybe they had some proxies involved, but the bottom line is, it was Iran. Second, an attack of that magnitude, if that's not enough to persuade Donald Trump, who's kind of a wild man, to retaliate, then Iran is feeling kind of jubilant. In other words, they can have kind of their way with us. And unless they get really, really, really outrageous, we're not going to do anything. And then third, Iran is setting this up so that they can do more and more strikes like they did in Saudi Arabia. Because now they're fairly confident that nothing's going to happen to them. And of course, the Europeans are feckless. I'm being kind. The Europeans are feckless. Iran has no concerns over them whatsoever. One of the things that the attack that Iran launched on the Saudi refineries, it showed the allies of the United States, and this is one of the purposes, one of the reasons Iran did it, that billions of dollars of weapons, like the billions of dollars we've sold to Saudi Arabia, can't stop little things like drone strikes. Secondly, it is shown that the Saudis are incapable or unwilling to retaliate without American backing. Therefore, they know the Saudis are going to do very little because America is going to do very little, unless they really cross the Rubicon, so to speak. Ironically, it kind of sets the United States up to where it has to respond, because if it doesn't, this is going to continue ad infinitum at an ever-escalating pace, and the Iranians know it. And the closer they get to the bomb, the more pernicious and out of control they are going to act. Okay, you're hearing it here first. I'm telling you, this is where it's coming. And they also know that this is kind of Trump's worst nightmare. It kind of feeds into the whole impeachment and the nonsense and the partisanship. So, let me continue here. There's a catch-22 in this Iran deal. It's kind of Trump's worst nightmare. The Iranians are well aware of the domestic upheaval here in this country. They're well aware of the divisions. They're well aware of the Democrats' impeachment nonsense. They're well aware of the whole nine yards. And they may be crazy, but they are smart crazy. And they know that Trump really has two options. Either he's going to stay passive, in which case they're going to be emboldened and they're going to be striking the Saudis again, or he's going to launch airstrikes and that's going to escalate the crisis, which is really what Iran wants. Go back to their original goal. The 12th Imam has to come and you need a holocaust to do it. This crisis, folks, is going to get worse before it gets better. This is not going to be some magic fix. Even if the press reports to you, even if Trump thinks that he has a fix with these folks, he doesn't have a fix. They're buying time and they're lying. And they are giggling about it. They are slapping, they're giving each other the high fives over every day they can buy without getting their butts kicked. And they know that at a certain point in time, nobody's going to try and kick their butts because they're going to have the bomb. I mean, they've seen it with North Korea. They got the model right there in front of them. And don't forget that Iran, and that Iran is well aware of this. Let's dig back into history not too long ago, 40-whatever years. Iran was largely responsible, if not primarily responsible, for making Jimmy Carter a one-term president. Keep that in mind. I know Iran is keeping it in mind. Now, I'm gonna give you a little globalism news here, and you're not gonna be happy about it. So over the last 4 or 5 weeks, whatever it is that I've been doing the globalist shows, and I'm gonna be doing a whole lot more of them. I brought to your attention that, in effect, a number of the largest, in fact, the majority of the Fortune 500 companies in the United States, and certainly almost all the SIFI banks, you know, the 17 too big to fail banks, which I talk about all the time, are owned and controlled by globalists, by those 300 puppeteers I keep talking about, which pull the strings on the entire planet. Now, since we know that the big banks are controlled by the globalists, and we know the globalists are, can I put it mildly, our enemy, what would you think if I told you that last week I brought up my concern over the fact that the Fed had to pump like 60 or 75 billion dollars three or four times into the banking system, that we needed to keep our eye on it? I told you a little bit about derivatives, etc. Well, you know, now it comes out that it wasn't 75 trillion or 150 billion, excuse me, or 225 billion. It was 1.5 trillion. Let me repeat that. $1.5 trillion that the Fed pumped into the banking system because of a systemic wobble, shall we say. Now, here's what you didn't know besides that number. There's this, this was not propping up the bond market. It was not propping up the debt market. It was not propping up any market except what's called the repo market. And this is a tiny little niche in the banking system. You'll love this. This is where all the big daddy banks, all the SIFI banks, all those creepy, monstrous institutions like Wells Fargo and Chase Manhattan, Bank of America, and on, this is where they park their money overnight. So if they have, you know, at the end of a teller's day, they have $1 billion more in assets than they have in liabilities. They take that $1 billion and they park it. And everybody thought they had been parking it kind of out in the open, but no. Instead, it's parked in this little corner of the financial system called the repo market. The repo market. And it seems, now that we're digging down into it a little bit, all you readers, all you listeners and myself, let's go back to 2008. So the Fed bailed out all the big banks with the TARP. Do you remember that? It was called the Troubled Asset Relief Program. And it was basically they saved the big banks, right? That's where the term too big to fail came in. The big banks returned the favor. This was the quid pro quo. To the U.S. Treasury. By purchasing trillions of dollars worth of unwanted, nobody would buy it, government IOUs, also known as treasury bonds. Then the big banks kept those in reserve, on deposit with the U.S. Federal Reserve. That allowed the Fed to keep bond yields low, and wave a flag of aren't we great, look at all this bank demand for U.S. sovereign debt. Well, there was no bank demand whatsoever. It was a quid pro quo. It was all American institutions, and they were taking the paper that they didn't need to buy to begin with and then shoving it in their own little cubby holes for later use. The value, in addition, let me step back. There's a thing called excess reserves. At the close of a business day, if a bank has excess reserves, my little example of, you know, you brought in $10 million more than you lent out that day, and cumulatively, then that $10 million extra is excess reserves. And the big banks, we're talking about billions, not millions, the big banks are taking those excess reserves, which in part is manufactured by their playing cutesy and tozy-tozy with the Fed, and they're putting them in the repo market. And the repo market pays this high interest rate overnight for surplus reserves. And in exchange for holding the reserves at the Fed, the banks get paid interest. You can't make this up. The Federal Reserve pays these banks for collecting and overnight depositing, literally overnight, like deposited at 3 and taken out the next morning at 8. These overnight parking deposits for all these excess monies, they all get paid interest by the United States government. That would be, by the way, a civics refresher. Who? Oh, that's right, us. We are the government. Exactly. So the bottom line is that the big banks, which are controlled by the globalists, and majority controlled by the globalists, I might add, are taking money that comes from their machinations, their cohorts, their collusion with the Federal Reserve, that create excess or surplus reserves, excess reserves every night. And every night they're parking those monies, billions and billions of dollars, with the Federal Reserve and getting paid an interest rate, which is part of our tax dollars. Isn't that terrific? Don't you feel good? Yeah, it's great. So the bottom line of all this, or what I'm trying to get to, is that the globalists are getting paid $43 billion a year in interest from our pockets. These are the same guys who want to tear America apart, who wish that all of us in flyover country didn't exist, who shudder at the sight of the flag, who cringe at the sound of the Star-Spangled Banner, and who are all about and all rah-rah for anything global, anything that mixes. The United Nations, for one thing. You know, all the libs love the United Nations. And all of us who are in the know, we know that they need to go away. They're taking up prime real estate in Manhattan. There's a way better place for those guys. And we don't need to be part of it because it's all charade. Anyway, these IOER, which is like interest on demand, basically, excess reserves, these sit in overnight funds. They collect an interest rate. And the bottom line of all this is that you and I are paying these big banks to park money, which is manufactured, conjured, doesn't really exist money, in the repo portion of the Federal Reserve, and then getting paid outrageous interest rates. Outrageous interest rates for this overnight parking. And of course, the next day they don't park anymore. They bring the money in, they loan it out to somebody else, creating even more additional profits. It's really quite unbelievable. I'm going to go into more detail of this in the next few weeks. We have government sponsored entities, or called GSEs, and they loan more than 90% of their overnight Fed funds transaction, creating yet another layer of income. You know, if you have funds sitting in excess reserve at the Fed, the repo market, and somebody takes that repo and does something with it, so long as the repo machine, if you will, is returned intact, that money is theirs. That money is theirs. Well, you know, you're probably thinking, you know, what does this have to do with me? What is the cowboy talking about? Listen, if you put your hard-earned dollars in, if you put your hard-earned dollars in these banks, and your hard-earned dollars go off in a check on April 15th to the federal government, your dollars are being used, folks, by these GSEs to make overnight loans in the repo market. The paper representing which is then legally laundered once again through the big banks, who take a nice 10 to 20 basis point, that would be almost a fifth of a percent, as an arbitrage, as an additional profit for temporarily holding the same money under their IOER deal with the Fed. This is recirculating money, except for our tax money, like 2 and 3 times, and then charging us for it. It's outrageous. And then eventually the money gets to the hands and feet and paws and fingers of people you and I don't like. People that you and I know have views anathema to the United States and contrary to the best interests of all of us out here in flyover country. Last week, the repo market went dry, folks. That's what happened. That's why the Fed had to pump a bunch of money into it. I'll come over. I'll explain more of all this in the coming weeks. But I think you get the sense of it. Just how corrupt this system really is. And to what extent the puppeteers, the 300 folks at the top, play the strings of everything underneath them, including big banks, which they own, by the way, a supermajority of, and therefore are getting 2/3 of the raping that you and I are receiving. How's that? Well, that's going to wrap up the show for this morning. Something to chew on there with that repo market stuff. We're going to go into it in greater depth. I have a great show planned, I hope, for next week. I'm signing books right now in Oklahoma, and it is a long grind every day. Trust me, a long grind. And I'm hoping to do this show next week, which has to do with voter fraud and some of the things you can do right now to help defeat voter fraud, expose voter fraud, and shut down voter fraud. This is a really important show. You need to listen to this. And I got all sorts of facts and figures on illegal voting and improper procedure at the polls and who really owns the voting machines and how they got in there, which happens to be, let me give you 2 words, Soros and Castro. I'm not making this up. Wait till you hear about it next week. 17% of the machines in the United States are on machines backed by and in one way, shape, or form controlled by George Soros and Castro from Cuba. That gives you a lot of faith, does it not? All right. Well, as to the books are rocking. Book 4 is now up on Amazon, and it's been cooking along there at Amazon. Moccasin Track, singular, not Moccasin Tracks. And we are at the Oklahoma State Fair in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Great folks. Very well laid out fair. Terrific staff. We have not done this particular event before, but it's by invitation, and we are thrilled to be here. And, you know, lots of new readers and lots of readers coming in for Book 4. We have a very limited number of Book 4, only about 300. As of the beginning of the event yesterday morning, and a lot less now. For those of you in Oklahoma or wherever that are listening to this, if you are looking for a book four, you wanna say hello to me and you want my ink kind of fresh on the page, you might want to think about coming to the Oklahoma State Fair in Tulsa. And by the way, we're in the main expo building, and our signing station is located down kind of in the southwest corner of the lower level, which is really quite nice. And there's a sign at the end of the aisle. I had to love this. It's elevated. I mean, it's like 20, 30 feet in the air. This is a big building. And the sign is Shootout in neon. I love it. It's perfect. It's, you know, kind of universal karma. So come on in and say hi. Love to sign some books for you. Say hi and say hello back at you. And in terms of other book news, as you probably know, the book is rocking, Moccasin Tracks, on Nook, on iStore, and on Kindle. It was top 100 Kindle, in fact, on August 31st, the day it came out on Kindle. And the Barnes & Nobles around the country finally are getting books into their stores. There was a 10-day period. You can't make this stuff up. There was a 10-day period where Barnes & Noble actually had books in their warehouses, but none of the stores in the Midwest or the West could order them. They would try to order them. They would hit the order button or whatever it's called on their system machine, and it would not order the books. Well, to make a long story short, I kind of beat the drums, as some of you can imagine who know me. And it was discovered that BN Corporate had not flipped whatever magic switch in their technical system that allowed stores to order from their warehouses to get books into stores so that readers could get them in their hands. Rather amazing. And additionally it appears that whoever didn't unleash that button did manage to unleash the button where they could get books into the warehouses. So you had books piling up at the warehouses, stores kind of desperate for books who couldn't order them, and, you know, welcome to the book world. That's all been straightened out. Barnes & Nobles are now getting books into their, on their shelves, etc. So for those of you who are not subscribed to the website, because I already sent an email out on that, call your local Barnes & Noble. Make sure you're on the list for book four. And that will help them determine the size of their orders and all that kind of good stuff. And you'll be kind of way down the pike on it, if you will. The December schedules, which are virtually all Barnes & Noble, except for Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne. I'll be signing at Warren, by the way, December 1st and 2nd. That's a Sunday and Monday. That's been firmed up, so that's going to be starting to change on the calendar. The rest of the calendar is up on the website. Check it out. If you have a book four that you got that was unsigned, whether from the publishers who ship thousands of books from their website or from any other source, feel free to bring it into your nearest BN store where I'm going to be signing. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to have a lot of time to yak because it's going to be busy. But it would be great to see you, and I would be happy to slap some ink on that book for you so that you do have a signed edition. Anyway, folks, that's all I'm going to give you on the books. And I will tell you that as much as I like Oklahoma and the folks in Oklahoma and the Oklahoma Fair and all the buyers and return readers of the books, it's going to be really nice to get back to the ranch. Really, really nice to get back to the ranch. I will be doing a signing on the way back, so to speak. It's a little bit out of the way, but that's all right. At El Castillo in Santa Fe, the night of October 8th. And I'm looking forward to that. I've signed there once before, and it was terrific. So if you happen to be in Santa Fe, that would be a place you might want to go to get the books. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Keep your eyes on Iran and don't be misled. Keep your eyes on this Joe Biden, Donald Trump, impeachment, Ukrainian circus, and know it for what it is. Look behind the scenes of any news you hear on it, because nothing is as it appears. Zero. Nothing. And there are no coincidences. And finally, remember my little historical story of tonight. You will never know who the ally or the enemy is. It's all a ruse. It is all a mirage. Your job, with the information I and hopefully some others give you, is to sift through it and know the truth. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.